Welcome to Sensible Health Solutions, the show where we simplify health and wellness. Join your hosts, Haley Fields and Dr. Scott Looper, as they share practical tips and expert insight to help you navigate common ailments, nutrition, and overall well-being. Tune in for straightforward advice that empowers you to live a healthier life.
Hello, Dr. Looper.
Hello, Haley.
So, we have been having an interesting conversation about the gut microbiome. And the last episode, we discussed my case, and that brought, you know, more questions for me. So, initially, I had taken the GI kit, the test.
So that's GI map.
The GI map. Yeah. Yes, that's the test that we use with Diagnostic Solutions.
Let me say a little bit about that test. What it does is it doesn't count up your bacteria by looking under a microscope like the regular tests do. Regular tests mostly focus on looking for pathogens. And this test, what it does instead is it measures the RNA of the organisms and then literally measures how much is there. And then it gets a much better picture of the normal bacteria. The emphasis on the GI map is not on the pathogens. The page one is pathogens. The other three pages are normal bacteria, or bacteria that are normal in low bounds, but if they overgrow, they become pathogenic, commensal bacteria. And then also a bunch of markers of digestion. There's immune markers there. There's digestive enzyme markers. There's inflammatory markers. There's a bunch of different kinds of markers. And one of the key ones that I look at is the antibodies that the the body makes for export into the digestive system. They're IgA antibodies. I want to see what the numbers there are. Some people make too many. Some people make too little, and this will screw everything up. So there's a lot of detail that comes through this thing. It's helpful in a way because it gives you a much bigger, much clearer picture of what's going on. The problem, too, is that there's too much detail. And how the heck you make sense of this thing. What are the patterns, right? You got one bacteria is high, one bacteria is low. What the heck does that even mean?
And what is that relationship?
And the answer is, to some extent, no one knows. And really, the people who run these a lot and then look at them a lot and then try stuff and then people come back and they say, did it work, did it not work? In other words, people like me who are actually providing care in the trenches, working the problems, these people know more than the researchers do, which is a shock to me. I figured the researchers would be know more about this than anybody else, and they don't. They don't know how to solve the problem. They don't know what to do. They keep trying stuff, and it was like, oh, man, what are you trying that for? We tried that 15 years ago. It didn't work, right? And then the researchers, I read the thing where they try a thing and it didn't work. It's like, I mean, thank goodness they're doing the research.
Yes.
We need researchers. People who are like me don't necessarily have the time and money to be able to put all this time into doing the research thing.
No, you got to be helping the people.
I depend on those researchers to do their work. And it turns out their work a lot of times sucks and is not helpful. They're real good about seeing connections between things and proving that there is a connection that we already knew there was, a connection between your guts and your brain.
Yes.
But they're not real good about knowing what to do about it. Right. So anyway, so you did this test.
I did this test.
Which is a great test. Highly recommend doing this test. It turns out to be one of the more important tests that I ever run is this test that gives the best picture of what's going on in your digestive system of any test I've ever done.
Super insightful. Very great information. And I'm so glad that I had done the test because really, initially, I wasn't experiencing any GI symptoms. I wasn't experiencing horrible cramping or constipation. It was more
bloody
so,
diarrhea.
Bloody, no. Yeah, no, it wasn't anything.
People do.
Right.
Shows up. It's clearly we got a problem with your digestive system, right?
Like right. That. But, you know, I for the most part, I thought that I was a healthy individual that was digesting her food properly and absorbing her nutrients properly. I had just been experiencing high anxiety, high depression, and it didn't necessarily make sense. I mean, I was going through some major life events when I was taking this test, but those life events didn't really line up with how poorly I was feeling. So then that...
I'm sorry, what major life events?
When I took this test, this was March of 2025. So I was in the process of looking for a home. I was stressed. I was done with my rental. I wanted to move into the next phase of my life.
So this is happy stress.
Yeah.
This is we're growing. This is not, you know, your dog died kind of stress. This is like, woo-hoo, let's go forward.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. And
yeah. Right?
It caused me, you know, some mental stress having to, like, make these decisions on my own as a single parent and, you know, having the status of the world kind of frighten me in my ability to be successful in these endeavors.
Changes are hard.
But March of 2025, and, like, you know, spring is a pretty difficult time for a lot of people in Fairbanks, Alaska. But
Suicide rate goes up in spring.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But I had gotten to the point where I wanted to look inside. I wanted to know what was going on because something didn't feel right. And so we talked about testing my hormones, and I did a urine test, which we can talk about on another episode about hormones. That test took longer. While I was also checking my urine, I was like, might as well do a stool test. Might as well look inside the gut. That test came back quicker. And what we found was a bunch of infections in my gut. And my gut was taking away from the blood from my liver so that my liver could process all these stress hormones. So it was giving me higher levels of cortisol.
Wait. Let me translate. So the stool test results come back in about 2 weeks. The hormone test that uses urine comes back in about 3 weeks. And what I told you was there's a connection between your guts and your hormones, and it's through your liver. Your guts get funneled, whatever you absorb from your digestive system gets funneled to your liver first, and your liver has to deal with it. Now, if it's happiness and joy because you ate great food, then, you know, your liver does fine. If it turns out to be, you know, sadness and depression because you ate something that didn't get digested and your bad bacteria, you know, are making toxic poop, that's getting absorbed by your bloodstream and going to your liver. And now your liver's, you know, busy trying just to get the basic jobs done. And the hormone thing just goes to the back burner.
Right.
It just doesn't do hormones.
And then it piles up.
And then the hormones pile up and eventually they go from the back burner to the front burner and your liver will batch it. It will focus on hormones. And the hormones will pile up and they come back down. And the experience of that is, if you're menstruating, is PMS.
Yep, and I was having severe PMS symptoms. I was having horrible cramping, you know, really bad.
If you're menopausal age, what you'll experience is hellacious menopausal symptoms.
Yeah.
But they're related. The process is the same. Liver's getting screwed up by your guts, and your hormones getting screwed up by your liver. And so the way to treat this thing is not to take a chill pill SSRI to feel better about it, because that's what everybody wants to do,
mm-hmm.
or just go on hormones.
Mm-hmm.
That helps, but it doesn't really get to the underlying problem. The real solution is to fix your guts, which is not very easy. It's not like self-evident. It's not like you take probiotics and it's just better. What you end up having to do is really grow a garden.
Uh-huh.
You know, gardens are not an easy thing to do. You think, well, no. I'm going to put some plants in the ground, and I'm going to water them, it's going to be great. Well, it is great, unless your acid's wrong,
mm-hmm.
and then it doesn't grow right.
Mm-hmm.
Or you got nematodes, or you have, you
Moles.
Know, the calcium is missing in the soil, or something like that. Then there's a zillion things that go wrong. It's enough to drive you crazy. You need to be a master gardener to be able to figure it out, or lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There it is.
Well, we can't rely on luck all the time. And so it came to a point where I looked at all of this and found that there was so much infection. Now, since March of 2026 was also difficult because, fast forward a year, I bought a house. So moving into the house, getting settled into the house, getting adjusted to new home ownership, that was a big stressor. But I wasn't as bad as March of 25 when I had the most severe anxiety and depression symptoms that led me into testing. So the little bit amount of treatment that I did within that year really did help, but it wasn't all the way done. So now I'm back on the regiment. What I do want to talk more about, though, is the connection to the brain and the different neurological disorders that can exist with gut infection.
And yeah, okay, let's do that. Let's talk about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a disease that's inflammatory. And what happens is the brain starts piling up this stuff called beta amylase, and the beta amylase disrupts normal brain function. And the neurons don't do what they're supposed to do. And what people do is they start forgetting stuff. And their personality changes. And their ability to see things in perspective changes. And then they, I mean, if it plays all the way out, eventually they can't, it's not compatible with life.
How does their personality change? Do they turn more pessimistic, mean?
It varies.
Okay.
Usually whatever kind of stuff that was going on under the surface that they weren't showing people, their ability to not show people goes away. And so then they play it out.
Oh.
Some people become angry. Some mm-hmm. people become depressed. Some people become promiscuous. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that'll pop up.
Right.
And things get really weird. That, yeah. And then it's like, I don't know this person anymore. I mean, I've been married to him for 50 years, and then they changed, right? It's like that.
And that has been something I've heard in end stages of life or in later stages, like older, the older you get, the more these changes occur. But you're saying it's associated, it's not because of the age.
It's brain damage from inflammation. I'll say that again. It's brain damage from inflammation. That's what it is. So when you try to stop the beta amylase, and there's drugs that'll do that. They'll literally prevent beta amylase from being laid down in the brain. You would think that would solve the problem. That would be the cure for Alzheimer's. And it isn't. It helps a teeny bit, and then everything falls apart. And it does not stop the progression. In fact, it helps so little that people can't tell. You have to do big studies and spend tons of money, and they do, and they have. And then you can see these very slight little improvements over vast populations. And that's enough to justify taking the drugs. And there is a fortune to be made in these drugs if they can prove that they help. And most of they don't. Most they don't. They literally don't help. And the long run, they don't help. That's clear. In the long run, nothing helps that's ever been come up in a pill.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what actually helps, what helps the most is for you to reduce the inflammation and get everything running better, except for how do you do that? This is the same conversation we had the last show, which is, okay, so there's a connection. The research has shown unequivocally there's a connection between Alzheimer's and your gut bacteria. Gut bacteria that's bad, Alzheimer's shows up. Gut bacteria is good, Alzheimer's doesn't show up. Now, there's a lot of different elements here, vitamin D is part of this thing, and caffeine is part of this thing, a bunch of other stuff.
Another thing that's a part of the thing is blood sugars.
Yeah, blood sugars are another part of this thing. Mm-hmm. That's not so much in Alzheimer's, it's in dementia. But okay. Still, there's an element of dementia that's overlaps with Alzheimer's because they both share this brain damage thing. So you're right, blood sugars is another element. And so now it's complicated. Honestly, it is actually truly complicated. How the heck do you work it? And the answer is right now, the researchers don't know. It turns out the people who are the best at doing this are doctors that are willing to try stuff and just kind of figure out what works. I'm one of those people. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about some other guy. There's a surgeon who in Finland who is concerned with this problem that his patients were having. And it's a thing that happens is where they get this major surgery and then it disrupts their body. And then they go into organ failure and they die. This is multi-system organ failure is what it's called. And it plagues, you know, our surgical outcomes. Now, he looked at the situation and he had a double dose of common sense. And he decided, now this is going to sound weird. He decided how I'm going to prevent this is I'm going to have my patients eat fermented oatmeal.
Oh.
We're going to take oatmeal. We're going to mix it with bacteria. We're going to let it ferment. That is go bad.
Yeah.
It gets sour.
Rancid oatmeal.
Rancid is the word. Fermented is a better word. I like the word fermented better. And then we're going to feed it to my patients before they go into surgery. They have to all eat this oatmeal, you know, and then.
So that they don't die.
So they don't die. And what happened was they quit dying. His rate of multi-system organ failure went to zero.
Why oatmeal? Why fermented oatmeal? Why not fermented cabbage or like sauerkraut or kimchi or yogurt?
Just instinct. Yeah. instinct.
Fermented oatmeal.
Yes, instinct. Instinct was the thing. Instinct. And so the researchers, you know, heard about this thing, you know, because people talk, you know, this guy figured out this thing with the oatmeal. And so they wanted to know what was it. So they went and they analyzed the oatmeal and they found out that oatmeal had bacteria in it. Yeah, duh. Uh-huh. And they pulled one of the bacteria out and they used it by itself without the oatmeal. And actually it helped. Now, it didn't help as much as the oatmeal.
How does it help the organs from failing?
Okay, what it did was it decreased the dysbiosis. Dysbiosis is when you have bad bacteria in your gut and they make toxic crap and then it makes you sick. That's the mechanism. I thought that was self-evident.
So that's why
the organs
failed.
Yeah, what it is it treated the dysbiosis. Now, what it was really doing is the fermented oatmeal acted like a mulch. Basically, you're going to think, how do I grow the garden to get the garden to grow well? So what we're going to do, instead of spraying insecticides in the garden, and that, you know, will help to get rid of a bug, but the garden's not going to grow any better. Really, what we need to do is we need to mulch the garden. We need to enrich the soil and then get a bunch of plants all working together. And then we got this, you know, fabulous garden because it all works together. It's in a magical way. I mean, I don't know if magical is the word, but in this so complex way that it can't be analyzed, you know, by the human brain.
Yes.
Okay, let's just say what it is, right? And so... but it works. I mean, you can't maybe analyze every last little bit of it, but you can nudge the system and get it to go in the right direction. I mean, this is steady work for me. I mean, I don't use fermented oatmeal. I use chia seeds.
Yeah.
And
now I'm wondering if we need to recommend fermented oatmeal.
Whatever. There's lots of ways to skin
a
cat. Wouldn't
that make somebody sick if they were to eat fermented? No.
They quit dying of multi-system organ failure. That's what happened.
That's amazing.
You cannot argue with the results.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
That's amazing.
Now, it did not become the standard treatment because nobody could get their head around this oatmeal treatment. And so it was just a thing the surgeon did. Maybe a few others got, you know, well, this looks like interesting in the early adopters. But the regular people couldn't do it. What they had to do is they had to turn it into a pill. And so what they did is they pulled out Lactobacillus plantarum is actually the organism that they did. And they pulled that out, cultured it up, made it into a pill, and then started having people take it. And it actually helped. People did better. Somewhat.
Some...
not as good as the oatmeal.
Yeah, okay. I wonder if there is an ability to build resistance.
Now, here's the thing. Mindset is a real thing.
Mm.
And so if you're a doctor, you don't want to be giving your patients oatmeal because it seems funky. You know,
funky oatmeal.
Something you do if you lived in Finland, but not here in New York City. We're not doing this thing.
Maybe in Fairbanks, Alaska.
I need a pill, right? So they want to know what the mechanism is. And they want to reduce it down to this pill equals that outcome. Because that's how, you know, medicine has progressed. If they boil it down to the essential element, we're going to test that.
And
that is exactly
so
what does not work with this. Exactly does not work.
That all of these pharmaceuticals have derived from herbal.
So often is the case.
Remedies,
yeah,
right?
And the herbal remedies, instead of having one
these
thing in them, they have 100 things in them.
And
it turns out they get this broad spectrum of effect because there's 100 different elements here and 17 of them are biologically active, right, in human beings enough to be able to register it. And then the other stuff, we're not sure exactly what it does, but you get this gentle overall safe effect with fewer side effects, as opposed to you pull out the digitalis from Foxglove, right? And you use that and it works great until it kills your patients. And then pretty much nobody uses it because it's too dangerous by itself. Whereas if you do the herb, it's got this gentleness to it. Now, it just depends on your mindset. If you're a doctor and working in a clean office and use pills, this is what you're going to have to do. You're not going to use oatmeal. It doesn't make any sense. But if you're going to be, you know, a naturopathic doctor who has herbs on the in shelves and everything's herby here, then it's like a normal thing, like what we live. We have a different mindset, so we're willing to do those kinds of things.
Well, and I think the mindset is more so enhancing your body's natural ability to heal itself, and enhancing your body's natural ability to produce these enzymes, to produce this beneficial flora in your gut.
So in the patients that I see that have Alzheimer's, what I end up doing is treating their guts. And what I see them do is get better. This is real. It's a real thing. We can actually treat this. Now, I have not cured Alzheimer's. I don't know how to stop it. But what I can do is roll it back.
Slow it.
And get it where people are better. They come back, their memory's better, they feel better, they're functioning better. I have not been able to cure anybody 100%, just have it completely go away, because there's some element of brain damage to Alzheimer's. And by the time they show up with symptoms, they already have the brain damage. So what we're able to do is we're able to back it up and either slow down or stop the process. Now, I'd say stop is the right word, except for now we're going to have to stop it for another 20 years. You're never going to eat pizza again. Well, usually what happens is people, you know, now they're motivated and they do everything you say because they got this thing and their memory's falling apart. And so they're highly motivated. 2 years into it, they're like, I'm better. And I'm just going back to what I was doing before. I love going out on Sunday mornings and eating home fries. Right? Because it's a tradition. I've been doing it forever.
And, yeah.
And I feel
and
better.
And now I'm better.
And now I'm better.
I can get back to my tradition.
Yeah, it's hard.
Going to the bakery every Sunday morning.
It's hard to make those changes deeply. So it's going to take all of us working together the best we can. If they can come up with something that actually helps the digestive system work better because it's a super antibiotic. Let me talk about what the hope is right now for this. The hope is we can use artificial intelligence to analyze the patterns and to be able to come up with a custom treatment. Because one size does not fit all.
Right.
No way. It just doesn't work. People are different. They live in different areas. Somebody in the South living on grits and somebody in the North living on, I don't know what. They don't have the same environment. They don't have the same gut. They don't have the same bacteria. They need to be treated differently.
Our ancestors are all different. Right. Our ancestors were all eating different things. So we aren't raised or grown to be able to handle.
So the hope is we're going to use AI. We're going to take the test like the GI map or some test like that, and then run it through and have the AI look at the pattern and come up with a custom formula that'll include prebiotics, various kinds of fibers, anti-inflammatories, kind of what we're doing right now, probiotics, depending on what the situation is, like we do too occasionally. Somebody comes up with no acromantia, We put them on acromantia.
That's a probiotic. What would be an example of a prebiotic?
The prebiotics are things that the bugs need to live on, okay. And it's mostly fiber.
Okay.
It's various flavors of soluble fiber. So the thing about soluble fiber is goo.
Mm-hmm.
It's fiber that mixes with water, so it's soluble. Insoluble fiber is hunks and chunks, like gravel, wood chips, seed coats. I mean, stuff that you just can't digest. I mean, just won't break down no matter what. That's insoluble fiber. And we eat it. I don't know if you know. It's on stuff. That we just can't break it down.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can give a combination of these various kinds of fibers, the right kind of bacteria. And the hope is, again, I'm going back to what I'm saying, is that the computer is smarter than the people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know.
You know, things progress.
They're pretty dumb.
It doesn't help me now, though.
No.
Right now, what I got to do is I got to come up with a way to do this and get it to turn today. I mean, I'm going to have patients come in and see me today who are going to have this problem.
Well, and then, okay, so something we just discussed that gave me a question was, are there tests out there that can look at your lineage and see where you came from and what those people ate?
Yeah, the answer is yes, and it doesn't really help. This has been worked out. The degree to which your lineage influences this is about 10%.
Okay, well,
that's not enough to warrant all the time and attention and money.
What about having a parent with diabetes or a parent with cancer or a grandparent with heart disease?
Now, the way that helps is when it comes to me sitting down with you and saying you have this problem and you're going to have to make a life change, there's going to be a resistance normally and change is hard. But if you've had a parent that died from diabetes or is suffering from diabetes, you are highly motivated to do this thing. You say, anything but that.
Anything.
So my most highly motivated patients who are open and willing to make important lifelong changes are the ones that lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's extremely important for that experience for that individual person.
And I'm more so curious about the genetics, right? Because unfortunately,
genetics have come about that much.
Right. And I do make lifestyle choices to delay those potential outcomes.
Good, you should.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. What you do is you kept diabetes runs your family. You should just start eating like you had diabetes.
Yeah, I mean, I exercise. Like, I don't want diabetes. That's for sure. And then, I do.
Croissants are bad.
Oh, I love them though.
We've had them in the house. We bought a box of them because Patrick wanted to have them for breakfast.
Uh-huh.
And he did for a week and then kind of burned out on them. They're just too rich, even for him.
Now you have
butter and flour mixed together. This is amazing invention.
Layers.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you got to come up with something else. Turns out yogurt and berries and nuts is the way to go. I do it that way. And it turned out to be tasty and delicious, too.
While you were in France, did you guys get fresh croissants?
We did. We also got stale croissants. What they did with the with the stale croissants is they turned them into French toast. Turns out French toast is the real. The French actually fed us French toast. They use old croissants to do it. Now, I had a teeny little piece of one. I ate the whole thing because I can't do that.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, on vacation, I ate half of one of these little croissant thingies. And, oh, man, it was just fabulous. And then I also had yogurt and nuts and berries.
Yeah, yogurt, nuts, and berries.
As long as you make the dough really small, then I have a real good chance of breaking it down. It doesn't cause a lot of problems. And then the chances of actually having a problem is less. And anyways, I can go on. I think we're out of time, though, right?
We're close, yes. I think this is it for this episode. I know it kind of jumped around to a lot of different segments, but there's just so much information about this gut microbiome thing. And it's just so eye-opening and so amazing to know.
Yeah, let me summarize it. It's important.
Very.
This is on the upswing. More research is being done now than it's ever been done before. People are looking at this thing because it's real. They're really trying to figure out how to do this thing. There's a bunch of stuff we didn't talk about in terms of animal research and how it's applicable. And there's all these kind of things and really how to analyze the results. And what it comes down to is it is proven there's a connection between our brains and our gut. There's a connection between our gut bacteria and dysbiosis and whether we get Parkinson's or not, whether we get Alzheimer's or not, whether we get a bunch of diseases, just normal anxiety or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no doubt, no doubt. Solid. What is not solid is what do you do about it? Because the researchers want to come up with a pill, and there is no pill. Pill doesn't work. It literally doesn't work. It helps a teeny bit where it's hard to notice. What really helps is you have to think like a gardener, and you have to go in and transform the system and make it more healthy. And it's not one thing. It's going to be the plants. It's going to be the soil. It's going to be the pH.
It's the diet,
it's going to be
the exercise,
everything. I mean, you look at all the different elements to it. That's what it's going to take. It takes this consciousness of kind of leaning in and living a way that really, when you get down to it, is very similar to our ancient ancestors lived. We basically need to live like cavemen and eat, you know, nuts and berries and grubs.
We
and
need then to go hunt and better. Forage.
Yeah, like that. And we need to also go work for our food and go out there and work and exercise a lot. If we don't do those specific things, we got to do stuff that fakes it. And then we come out better.
I'm surprised we haven't mentioned exercise in the last two episodes.
Turns out to be super important.
Maybe we can save that for the third episode.
Yeah. We every time we do these shows, we always boil down to eat right and exercise. Uh-huh. And we do. But the mechanism is really actually interesting. And the thing is well, I keep getting actual real life people with the actual real life problem actually sitting in my chair in my office with me saying, what do I do, Dr. Looper? I got to come up with stuff to do. And I got to tell you, my kudos go out to the surgeon in Finland who came up with the fermented oatmeal. Yeah, I want to look into how does he make it, right? What's the formula on this thing? Although I have to say what I'm doing right now seems to be working pretty good, but I don't know, it's nice to have other
tools. I would love to see the look on patients' faces if you advise them to do fermented oatmeal.
Yeah, you know, they only had to do it for a while, just long enough so that they didn't get this multi-system organ disease. I wonder which ones of them kept doing it and thought, this is great. I want to keep doing this.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Looper, I think that's it.
All right. Very good, Haley. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sensible Health Solutions. We hope you found today's discussion enlightening and packed with practical tips to enhance your wellness journey. Remember, small changes can lead to big results. If you enjoyed the episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Your feedback helps us bring you the best content possible. Stay connected with us on social media for more health insights and updates. You can find us at Sensible Health Solutions across all social platforms. Until next time, stay sensible and stay healthy. This content is for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Seek medical advice from a healthcare professional for any medical conditions.